My name is Claire Coyne. I'm interviewing Mike Hodgson on the 11th of December 2014 at his home in Welwyn Garden City for the Mithras Oral History Project. So Mike, I did of course mention your name then, but if you could introduce yourself, giving your full name and your year of birth.
Right. John Michael Hodgson, born 8/11/33.
And if you could just tell me in one or two sentences where you were born and what your mum and did during their adult lives.
I was born in Cone in Lancashire. My father had a joiners and builders business.
And your mum brought you up?
My mother. I was reared by my mother, yes, who'd worked in the mill during the First World War, but then got married and had children and looked after me.
And again, just in one or two sentences, because as you know, the main focus is to chat about the Mithras site. What did you do during your working life?
I worked after National Service, I worked for the Soil Survey of England and Wales and Rothamsted Experimental Station and finished up at Cranfield University.
Great, okay. So in 1954, you were just shy of 21.
I was 20.
You're 20, yeah.
Yes, 20 mid, yes.
And you said you were at university when?
I was at King's College in London from 52 to 55.
So what's your main memory or association with the excavation site for the Temple of Mithras in 54?
Well, the main thing is my contact with Grimes. A fellow student and I don't know how we got this job, but we were asked, cajoled into going down to help Grimes survey a site, a rath in Pembrokeshire. He kind of had interest in other sorts of archaeology in Wales. He was fairly Welsh in inclination. We went down there basically to make a contour map of a sloping site. It was a rath on a sloping site. It had the normal kind of I suppose embankments round it, but it tipped down to the sea somewhere off, I don't know exactly where it was, but overlooking St. Bride's Bay. And we stayed at Dale Fort Field Centre, and there was, or they were digging whilst we made this map, and I think we were there for a fortnight. Got to know Grimes quite well, partly because for light relief, I think he came to at times he got out of the way and actually came to talk to us, so we knew him quite well. There was a lot going on in the town. I don't think he'd quite got a proper job. He certainly hadn't got a kind of an office. And there wasn't a London Museum. It was all in store. And anyway, more about that later. He hankered after Roman archaeology because there was whilst we were there, there was a chap called William Gold who was I think he was the principal or the vice principal of a teacher's training college near Carleon. And this man, Gold, was had a lot to do with the excavations at Carleon, not just the Roman ones, because the castle and the Roman ones. And I was in on a kind of a lunchtime conversation between we were sat there kind of listening. I wasn't aware at the time there that Grimes was doing any Roman things. That's what he seemed to want to do. That was that. Anyway, we did this map.
Was this during the summer of 54, would you say?
Yeah, I think it was Easter. I think it was the Easter Vac, 54. I think it was then. It might have been the summer, but I don't think we'd have had time to finish the map between the time that... That's guessing. So I'm guessing that couldn't have been Whitsuntide because we were there a long time. I mean, it could be pinned down. If I could pin down where the... If we could pin down when Grimes actually was at... He didn't stay at Dale Fort, I don't think. We stayed in Dale Fort, at the field centre there. And there were a lot of young... The main excavators, I think, the ones I noticed were a party of young schoolgirls. I can't really remember just who were there. I don't think they found much. I know they'd opened the door, one of the ways in, the kind of a doorway, an entrance to the raft, some time before. And there was, I think there was kind of a sentry box. They knew there was an arcuate thing. And I think I saw pictures of that. And that had all been covered up again. And they were looking at some hut sites. Whether they were arguing the toss whether they were going to be square hut sites or round ones. I remember that. But they didn't find very much. And that was that. Anyway, how I communicated with how we the incident of the other young man who was with me was called John Kenny. And I've tried just recently asking fellow students at the time if anybody knew where he was. Anyway, nobody knew. There aren't all that, quite a few of us have gone. So anyway, I couldn't find John Kenny just to see if he knew, could remember more than I did. Anyway, to go back to college, and in the early weeks of, we went back, I think, October, first week in October, it was sometimes the 6th, the 7th, the 3rd of October, that kind of thing. And we'd to use the facilities in the college to finish the map, and then Grimes. Now, we did several things with Grimes. We went to Walbrook, to the site. And the order of when we did these, I don't know. We went to a building, which was like a store. It had two offices on one side. I can't really... High ceiling building. And there were ladies in offices, two offices on one side. And there was a storeroom straight on, and a bit of a bench on a wall on one side. And we went there to look at some bits and pieces. And we went to lunch at the Cheshire Cheese, a really posh lunch at the Cheshire Cheese, with silver service and white tablecloths. It was kind of, I suppose it's a gastro pub now, but it was a kind of a restaurant then. It was a Fleet Street lawyers, newspaper people's restaurant, and it wasn't long after kind of rationing had finished, and he gave us a super lunch. I had a steak and kidney pudding, which I'd never had before, I remember this, and a bottle of Guinness, I remember that. And then I think it was after that we went to St Bride's Church. Sorry?
If I could ask you to not move your feet, that would be great.
We went to St Bride's Church, and in the crypt at St Bride's Church, which was either they'd just started or they were thinking of starting to excavate that. And there was kind of an ossuary, skulls and bones and whatnot, and two or three coffins. And anyway, he was telling, he told us about that. Now, I don't think we fitted all that into one. I don't think, I can't remember how we got from one to the other. I don't think we fitted them in all in the one day. I think that we actually went to show him a sample of the map to get his approval, and then on the day that we were to deliver it, I remember we went with this map roll and we went to the Cheshire Cheese. So I think we went to Walbrook and the museum building, the store place, on the one day, and a few weeks or a week or 10 days or something later, we went to St. Bride's. So,
And sorry, I should have asked you earlier, Mike, what were you studying at university?
Geography. At that stage I was a geography student, hence the mapping. I'd been on, I think this job came to me via this chap called Zoyner, who was a, he was at the Institute of Archaeology, as it was then, which was a tiny place in, near UC, somewhere. And I think the job came via him, because we'd been to some lectures by Zoyner on Mediterranean sea levels. And I think that's how the job came our way, just why we got it and not, I mean, we did it just for our keep, so that was it. When we went to the site,
the Temple of Mithras site.
We went in, and I don't think there were people working up the far end, at the one end, there were the wheelbarrow and chaps shifting stuff, hanging around. We went in, and Grimes didn't, either we'd got not got the time, Grimes didn't, he didn't, we didn't talk to any archaeologists, let's put it that way. I think they were just tidying up. I just think they were moving stuff around and tidying it up. Job finished. Anyway, we stood there and he talked about, described the layout, and it was a temple, and talked about this last minute find. I was ever so pleased about it. I mean, he was a very open person, very, very open person with us. He wasn't like university lecturers, teachers. He didn't regard us as students. We were kind of doing a job for him. And I don't think he'd done much teaching. I mean, he'd been on aerodromes, rescue, scraping up bits and pieces before they built a wartime aerodrome, and that's what he'd done. I mean, I think the whole concept of the London Museum and finding a place for it was probably up in the air. I don't think, and I'm not sure whether he was on the staff of the Institute of Archaeology or not. I think he was pending a job at the Institute of Archaeology. Not sure whether he'd just got it or, but funding for everything was quite clearly extremely, extremely difficult.
So, thinking about your impression of the site, you're a geography student, how much did the site make an impression on you?
Well, it made an impression. I mean, I quite a bit of, even at that stage in life, I've had contact with archaeologists. I mean, I've even given courses to archaeologists on soils. I started all sorts of quite well-known people off on kind of studying soil sections, and so I got quite an interest. We didn't spend all that long. We went down and looked at a bit of it. There was a lot of talk. There was a lot of talk about how unique it was. How unique the Mithras bit was, because if I got it right, he was saying that, well, there wasn't anything quite like it in the country. There was a touch of kind of he mentioned St Albans and a Mithras place, well, near Harpenden, as a chapel, I think it was described as, near Harpenden. And as far as that was concerned, the Mithras was everywhere else in Europe rather than here. So it was a very exciting find, a very, very exciting find, which I think we didn't quite understand because we hadn't got the background, but that was it. He was also kind of, he'd have liked to have done a lot more, let's put it that way. They'd shut down on him, hadn't they? I know they'd shut down on him. They just found the bits and pieces, dug a little bit more, and then, what do you call it? Now, when we went to this building, this place, which was a museum store, where they'd put all the stuff. Do you know where that was?
No, I mean, the London Museum did exist at the time. It was in Kensington Palace. So that would have been a journey across town, so you might remember that. And then later the statues were shown at the Guildhall for quite a while, I think. And then obviously eventually they went to the Museum of London when it opened. The storehouse could have been part of the Guildhall. Could have been something to do with them, actually.
Anyway, there were people in offices, and there were some on this kind of high shelf, kind of on the side, a 4 foot highish, not table height, shelf on the side. There were some bits and pieces that had been put out for us. And a lady we talked about these things, and we went to get some more. I'm pretty certain that the Mithras head wasn't there. It wasn't there. The stuff that came out was higher, the stuff that they got out before they found the Mithras head. There were marble alabaster, bits of figures, like goddesses or Minerva or Zeus, or I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they were, but there were substantial pieces of pottery which wasn't Samian ware. Kind of dirty pottery, greyish, not red anyway. Kind of what do you call it? Some of it rather nicely. Not finger mark, but sculpted pottery, nice bits of sculpted pottery, which didn't mean a lot to us. But
you said it was put out on the side for you. Sounds like it was done specially. So was the visit arranged by Grimes?
He took us there. We went. We didn't know what we were doing. We just, and how we got there, I don't think we went in a taxi. I think we probably walked. And how we got there, I don't know. But anyway, we were shown and then told another story about what it was about. This was a treat. This was his thank you for doing the job.
And this was the day you thought was separate to the day you went for lunch.
Although I'm not sure. That's where I'm come. I cannot remember. Going, I know, you see, I've gone up and down Fleet Street and, Chancery Lane and whatnot umpteen times, and down to the city and what do you call it. So the little journeys like that were all they all get mixed into one. And then I've been to the London Museum since and seen the Mithras head set up and the al I mean the alcove where it was, the whatever it was, the sacred place where it was supposed to be set up in what do you call it? So that kind of confuses it. I think we were pointed out where in on the site, that's down there, that's where it came from, and that's a bit of a shell.
So you know when you went to the sites, and you said it looked like they were kind of probably clearing up and they were finishing off. Do you remember seeing the crowd? You know, these massive
No,
crowds.
We went in and there was nobody there. There was just the kind of the boarding, whatever it was, round the outside was, and we went through a kind of a doorway. And we stood for a long time at just inside this doorway, which was fairly high up, so you could see the broad layout of it. And then we went down and we looked at some of the masonry work, some of the bits of walls, a few pillars, bits of pillars, the odd wet spot. It was down in the bottom, it was wet.
And why do you think so many crowds were drawn to the site? Because it was.
Well, you see, I mean, why do I think, was it publicity, I suppose? I don't know. I don't know. London was a fairly dull place at that time. I mean, rationing had not long. Sugar ration, I forgot which one it was, bread or sugar or whatnot, in the hall of residence where we stayed, where we lived. Rationing was still going in 52, 53, just before then. It was a fairly kind of. I mean, it was the aftermath of the 1951, Britain thing, which was meant to cheer everybody up. I see. I was unaware. I was unaware of the crowds, and I've only been, in a sense, reminded of the crowds by you. We would have been down to South Wales, come back to university. Wouldn't have known about that. Even though we'd been in London for some of the time, I wouldn't. I don't think I would have been aware of it. So that when we were taken, perhaps wasn't as much of a treat as Grimes as Grimes thought it was. He was a very. I mean, he was a very nice man, a very. Kind of quite smart as well. I never really even digging, he seemed to have a suit on.
So, you were studying geography and then you went on to have the career that you had. But you know, you've always worked, like you say, you've come across archaeologists a lot and you've even taught them. What for you does archaeology mean? Why is it important and meaningful?
Well, why is it? It fills out a life, doesn't it? I mean, so much of Britain. You see, I used to do soil survey and early career. I used to go around farms and what do you call it? And you'd find stuff. You'd find disturbed sites and what do you call it? And people weren't. Well, I found some a good example actually. Working in near Chichester, and I went in this w small wood near Chichester and dug up a hole, and found some Roman. Oh, the other thing that was at at the museum, there was a bit of decorative plaster when we went there, kind of showing there'd been a posh route, a kind of a decorated wall. I've forgotten what was on it quite, but anyway, no, surveying, soil surveying in Sussex, I found some bits of Roman brickwork and tile and mortar and plaster. Took it to the Chichester Museum and they said, oh yes, they didn't really want, even want to, where is it? Didn't really want to. And this of course was before Fishbourne and another site, but obviously quite clearly been a, so Roman stuff, I mean, it was Barry Cunliffe and Chichester and Fishbourne that really made Roman archaeology important again. I've looked at a few sites. Roxeter, tried to explain how what the dust was that got into the hypocaust at Roxeter. Oh, I've forgotten who that was for. Looked at a place at, anyway, quite a few bits and pieces. The course I gave a course at, it was the Birmingham Extramural Department for archaeologists, and can't remember the name of all the people who were on it, but there was a chap called J.G. Evans, who was a mollusk man, archaeological mollusk man from Cardiff. He was a lecturer there. Okay. Chap called Don, another professor, Don Bradman, Boardman, something like that, who was another archaeological guru. A lady called Susan Limbury, who was a lecturer at Birmingham. And then I gave the course again at, same thing, at Oxford, at an extramural centre in Oxford. Forgotten the name of it, and another group of people, and we did a at this place for Birmingham, we did 3-4 days, three-day course in soils for archaeologists. Set it all off. Other people taken over since, moved on.
And what about in your own time, in your leisure time? You talked about how archaeology has been a part of some of your working life. What about on holidays and in the evenings, tele programmes and stuff like that?
I follow those. Yes, I've been to Mycene. I mean, I've studied the Mycenaeans. I've been around. Been round Crete. I've been round. you name it. I've had a look at all the just a superficial interest, really. Kept in touch. Well, I've done mammoths in the Rhine Valley, and yes. I have a friend in a German well, academic contact, who was a lecturer at Heidelberg University. Used to did buried soils and archaeology in the Rhine Valley with him. Absolutely nuts he is, but there we go. He has all these men, these quarrymen, these digger drivers, and ring him up and found something, and get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go hairing off in the snow to see what there is. What else? Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah. The best, the best bit of the thing. I'm really quite interested in this, in the St Brides, and I don't know what stage of development that was. I think that was brand new to him, absolutely brand new.
Okay, well that's great. Thanks. I think we're coming to the end. Is there anything else? Do you think? To add before we finish in relation to the Temple of Mithras site or Roman history in Britain?
What else there was? No, I'm a dead loss on that, aren't I, really? No, I mean, he told us a tale about how he'd found it, how he'd... I think they'd worked at it kind of a couple of years. They'd had two bits of do's at it and been interfered with by the planners or the builders or the what do you call it, and come back at it in bits and pieces. And I think he'd probably got limited access, to be quite honest. So he was quite proud that he could. Put it all on the fact that it was just the fact that it was there, and then this, and I think they were in a sense I think they were, I mean, not lost, but I think that was the gist of it, really. It was the overall and the importance of that Mithras had got to the British Isles and they'd found an actual bigger. I think that was a thing, that they got little chapels or little places, just a sniff of Mithras cult, and this was a proper part of it, at least, was a proper Mithras temple. But I'm not so sure they thought, there was quite a lot of stuff on top of the Mithras, wasn't there? Kind of several cultures, several cults, several few hundred years of Roman occupation, I should think. Well, that's it, really.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
So, Mike, you were just... If you could just repeat your story about during National Service.
When I was doing my National Service on Salisbury Plain, you could go to Stonehenge and places like that, Amesbury, places like that, and at Stonehenge you could take your motorbike and go partway across the grass and probably take it right up to the stones if you wanted to. Walk through, nobody about, nobody interested, just have it all to yourself. Amesbury, similar, you could, if we went up the, yes, you could go up the church tower and look at the village. Yes, I spent quite a bit of time on Salisbury Plain. Two years, not much to do.
So what year was that?
Well, that was 55, 57. It was in the Royal Engineers on Salisbury Plain, playing at soldiers, blowing things up.